Hey everyone, welcome back to The Screenwriting Life. I'm Meg LaFauve.
And I'm Lorianne McKenna.
And today we are so excited to be featuring a special listener spotlight interview featuring a longtime TSL listener, Jennifer Deaton. We are really especially excited to have her on because she is a studio reader. And I personally want to know what a studio reader does and how it works. And, you know, she's going to have a really interesting perspective on writing because she's also a writer and she has learned a lot about writing and the other side, which is how your writing is assessed.
And she's a really big advocate of communities and community building and has built some of her own. So we are very excited to chat with her about her career and her connection to the podcast, of course. So thanks for joining us, Jen.
Thank you. You sound just like Meg and Lorianne on the podcast.
Did you know there was so much hand waving though behind the scenes? But you didn't know that.
I might have pictured it.
Full body talking. Yeah.
All right. We always start our show with our week. So we're going to ask Jen to join us. So Lorianne, how was your adventures in screenwriting this week?
It was good. Yesterday, I got a call from someone who used to be a PA for me in production, and he told me that he sold his first script. And it's in large part because of the podcast and because of how, you know, encouraging I've always been with him and reading his stuff. But, you know, he did it. It was his thing. Like, he stuck with it. But it just made me feel so happy and excited for him and proud of him. And at the end of the call, I was like, well, hey, if you're ever looking for someone to staff when you sell your TV show, you know, call me.
Exactly.
And he was like, yep. And I was like, yeah, I'm not kidding. Like, this is how it all works, right? Like, we're all equal here, right? I'm looking for work just like he is. So, but that for me was really special because, you know, I got to hire someone, sort of his first production job. And then, you know, now he's a writer officially. So I'm very, very, it's very cool. The other thing is I am in this place where I have been working on a project and I'm trying to write the sort of pitch for it. So it's very outside in for me because that's how I need to sell this project. It's a feature and it's a challenge for me because I write usually from character point of view. And I'm really struggling with this idea that keeps rolling around in my head. I can't do it. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm really bad at this. And I've been trying to figure out what it is. Like, is it imposter syndrome? Is it self-doubt? And then I decided in order to power through so that I wasn't bogged down with all these feelings that it is none of those things. It is simply a symptom of ADHD. Because when you have ADHD, it's out of sight, out of mind. So I live very much in the moment. And in this moment, I'm struggling with it. But when I remember what I was doing yesterday or last year, all the other badass things I've been and done and who I am, I've done this before. So it's just that my memory is shit because I'm neurodivergent and has nothing to do with my skill or my fraud syndrome, because I've done some pretty fucking cool things and I have pushed through this before. So all I have to do is remember that stuff and then I'm working on it, right? So for me, I've decided that that's what that is. Because if I struggle and roll around and that this is fraud syndrome and how do I fix myself and I'm broken, then I'll never fucking do anything. So that's where I am today.
And I like that.
Yeah. So it's just a symptom of being neurodivergent and it is nothing
it
else
just
more
is.
Complicated.
It just is. Do it anyways.
Yes. But for me, I have to be like, I have to remind myself, I'm not just who I am in this moment. You know, I'm a collective of all the things I've done and who I am. So that's how my week is, battling myself 1 minute at a time. Jen, how was your week?
Well, I did a bunch of writer things. I met a deadline. I was asked to write an article for the Editors Guild magazine, and I managed to get my first draft in when they expected it.
Fantastic.
And now I have to, after this is over, turn around working on the feedback that I got to revise it. And I also captured some thoughts on a new feature that I'm writing. I also got a rejection for... I'm collaborating with some people out of New York on a musical, stage musical. And so we got a rejection for workshop development, Eugene O'Neill National Musical Theater Conference thing. And
congratulations on that rejection, because it means you put yourself out there.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Then you can move on. Move on.
Yeah. And the next thing in just taking that hope on another project that has had some success, but has also had many rejections. I sent it to a new writer friend, a friend that I made in Austin at the film festival, Wonderful. To give me feedback to have it ready for this fellowship, writing fellowship in Greece that I hope Ooh. To
Let's do that.
Meet. Yeah, let's all go to that.
Let's do that. Can we do
And
that?
I saw two movies, which I think is an important part of being part of this community. One was called Always Lola, written by
Oh, I love that movie.
Directed, and I'm so glad I saw that. And I also saw Glitter and Doom, which is like an Indigo Girls queer romance that was made by some writers that I met through Outfest. So that was my week.
Thank you so much for watching it. I'm going to do my best to like not like wilt at the compliment. I really appreciate it. And you know what? You're not alone. TSL really showed up. I mentioned it on the show last week. So for all you who hopped on Tubi and even streamed it in the background without watching it, thanks so much. Our placement on the service has gone way up.
Fantastic.
And it's still there. Fantastic. So if you want to catch the movie, you should. Actually, I'm glad you mentioned Glitter and Doom. I helped a friend audition for that movie last year and thought the script was great. And I caught it too. So another great indie. It's playing in some theaters. So check out Glitter and Doom as well.
And Always Lola.
This episode really feels like it's about connections and circles and how we're all sort of connected. We just have to figure out where those pieces are, even though they're a long time out, right? Like years go by, but everybody sort of finds their way back to each other.
Absolutely. My week was, I have three quick things to say. The first is that sometimes I have to remember that we're creating an art form that is in people's heads, meaning like the producers, the executives, maybe you have a piece of IP, but what the movie is, everybody can have a slightly different idea of what it's going to be. And it can be 5 degrees off. And then by the time it gets anywhere, it's 100 degrees off, or it can be already 50 degrees off, but nobody's actually be able to articulate, or nobody has the time, or they just don't know that they all have a different movie in their head. And that can also be when you're collaborating with a writer, another writer. You know, I'm working with my husband on a project, and it takes a great amount of trust, because as you write, you start to realize you actually have slightly different ideas of maybe the tone or how far out on the edge are you going to go. Is that, that's a little indie. I thought we were doing a commercial big genre movie. And it's just such a balancing act of trying to have both these dreams merge together into a single dream. And I know that once you get it and you get that single dream going, then both of our brains will start working towards that single dream. But that beginning part, you really can be going back and forth. And it just takes a great amount of trust to allow your partner to dream a different dream than what you think you're doing, because my producer brain starts to panic because I'm like, wait a minute. We're not doing that. And I just have to allow that play to come in, which I don't know. It's so hard for me. Even after Pixar, it's just so hard for me. I think because it's on a deadline. And so I start to like break into hives because I'm like, please, please don't change the antagonist. Please don't. Listen, it just took us. We just got this far. Why did you just send me an essay on the antagonist being different?
I have to say, you know, I've worked with you on two projects. And the last project we wrote together, no, you're incredibly generous and patient with this process. Because
we should bring my husband on, because I don't think he would agree right now.
I that was my experience, right? Like you would sometimes, I would go off in weird places, right? Like pages and pages and pages of dialogue in a scene that was never gonna, it wasn't the same show. And you would read it and you would, you know, say like, what was good about it, and then sort of gently guide me back to like, but I thought this is what we were doing, but then, you know, adjusting as we went. But
I have to trust that like he went off on a different direction and I started to panic, but then I saw inside of that was something so cool and unique and different, and that he had actually tuned into lava, and that my brain really just wanted to stay in the practicality because it's safer over there. And I know this, I'm like talking about this on the podcast all the time, but you catch yourself doing it. Like you literally, it's almost like you wake up to, oh, I have been staying in outline because I'm afraid to write a movie about a marriage with my husband. Like there's a lot of lava.
Why would
bubbling.
That be scary?
There's so much bubbling lava, you guys. It's that, and no wonder I'm clinging to this life raft of the outline and what are we doing and what's the end? All of which are great questions, by the way. But he is just spelunking with fearlessness that is scaring the shit out of me.
Mm.
But he is finding things, and, you know, he's finding things that are making him get teary-eyed, right? And now it's interesting because now I'm like, but this is also my husband, and I care about him so deeply, and he's into his lava, and it involves me. I mean, it's just, it's a little complex, but this is why we took the project, because we knew if we were brave, we could bring something special to it, to be a married couple writing about a marriage, in essence. But it just takes a tremendous amount of trust and being willing to go into your own lava about process. And this, the second thing I want to say is involving this, which is because I was clinging to the life raft of outline, and letting, he was doing all the spelunking. You guys, I just got really grumpy and upset the last like 3 days, and I couldn't figure out why. And I was just eating pizza, like a lot of pizza. And I was eating anything I wanted. And I'm like, wait a minute. This is distress eating. This is not normal, like snacking, you know, I'm going to cheat on my diet.
Eating your feelings.
No, I was, but I didn't even realize that. I had to catch myself again going, oh, this is distress eating. I am distressed. What am I distressed about? Now, listen, there's plenty of things in our lives that we could be distressed about, but there wasn't a big change. I mean, it was the normal distress. And then I realized, oh, I don't want to be the gatekeeper, bookkeeper, typer, outline person taking all of his spelunking. My dreamer was getting really mad about it. That I was like, my dreamer was like, jump off already. So I did. And today, like last night, I was like getting, because he's not in this country right now, so we're doing it kind of night and day. And I was like, okay, I'll just re-outline it again based on his splunking, and I'll send it back. And I got so mad. Now, this is, thank God he's not here, because I could have got mad at him, which would not be fair, because he would literally be like, splunk away. Like, nobody's asking you to cling to the life raft. Nobody's asking you to do that, which actually, this is again marriage, right? Like half the time I'm blaming him for shit and I'm
but
not
it's
doing.
Funny that you said you get to.
Yes,
right?
That's
you
what
were
I'm
the
saying.
One giving
yes.
him that instead yeah. of being entitled to.
Yes,
also
this is
be
what
the
I'm
creative.
Saying. Yeah. This is marriage in a goddamn nutshell, too, by the way. I'm like blaming him for my unconscious cowardice. Today, I woke up and I was still distress eating. And I was like, what the hell, Meg? And I realized it just came up like a flower inside of my brain. I just want to write scenes. I just want to barf draft. I just want to be the one who goes splunking. And God damn it, forget the deadline. Take your producer hat off. Let go of the life raft. Let go of it. Yes, it may all go south. And my brain is always like, it's a waste of time. It's a waste of time. You're on a deadline. They're going to call any minute and say, where's this script? It's a waste of time. Okay, well, maybe it's going to be a waste of time, people, but I'm going to enjoy it. Like, I am not enjoying this right now. I am not enjoying this process. So, and it's not his fault. It's my fault. So I started writing this morning and I feel so much better. I don't feel like I have to go eat a pizza. I don't feel like I'm not mad at him. I'm just like, I enjoyed myself. Did I find all kinds of holes and problems? Absolutely. Do I have to at some point just say that moment right here? I know intuitively, like a tuning fork, that does not work. But you know what? It's good enough. It's good enough. It's a placeholder. I'm just going to keep going. And just finally getting back into that. And I think I just got so wrapped up in being the partner who was responsible, if that makes sense. Again, I'm not saying he's not responsible. I took a role on. That I would be the responsible one. I would be the one getting us on the deadline. I would be the one making sure we're doing the genre stuff. I was producing because I used to be a producer. I was teaching. I was doing all of the consulting. I was not right. Of course I was, but you know what I mean? So I feel much better. I have to keep going. I'm just going to keep going to the end. I sent him a text and said, you're not getting any outliner pages. I'm taking my turn splunking. Who knows what that's going to do for him? We'll see. I think he'll be thrilled. So it's been good. It's been good. But I can't believe I am on this show every day talking about barf drafting. And here I am distress eating because I'm not writing. I'm not writing. I'm not using that part of my brain.
I was talking about in mine, right? I'm spending so much time trying to figure out how to fix myself. What's wrong with me? And getting stuck in that circle of like, yeah, I should just sit down and do it. I've done it before. It's like this defense mechanism to keep me safe. But I'm like, from what?
Well, I'll tell you from what, because I have in my head the producers who are giant producers saying, yeah, this is just isn't working
oh,
for
well,
us.
Or, my friend.
You know, like I have them in my head now. And so I'm clinging to the life raft because I don't want to disappoint them. I don't want it to suck. I don't want to get that. I don't want to get that face.
Well, someone,
are you projecting that dialogue? Are you projecting
someone
that dialogue
I
in your head?
Consider a friend said to me yesterday.
I'm not projecting.
I'm just deciding if I'm going to break up with him or not because of this. Not kidding. He said, you're telling yourself no, so no one else can. And I was like, oh, that's what I'm doing. I don't know if that's what you're doing, Meg, but that's what I'm doing. I'm coming up with all these reasons to avoid being told no, to be avoid being told.
Well,
to
for
be
sure,
rejected.
If you're going out on a pitch or something, I do that all the time.
Yeah.
And I, or the passion project that you never sit down and write, because then it'll always exist somewhere, which it doesn't, which makes no sense. And yet it makes sense in your head because it won't be passed on by everybody.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, because I'm on deadline and I have to write a script, it's more about not wanting to fail, not wanting, but I have to do it. I have to try it. I have to just fail. I just have to say, this is what we did. You know what I mean? Sometimes you have people that you're working with who you have had a long relationship with. They know you. They know you as a writer. And so it's a more collaborative, just natural feeling, like with my friend, with my producing friends, Julie and Bonnie. Like, it's just more natural. I could give them anything and we would just start tussling it. But I don't know these producers, and they're really big and they're really busy. And this is one of many, many things they're doing. So I don't know, like, how, I just don't know. So, but you know what? Oh, well, fuck it, because they hired me. So, and they hired Joe. So we're going to give them, I'm trying to get my, let me just put it, sum it up by this. I'm trying to get the bar of expectation back to what I like.
Nice.
I'm trying. And to do that, I have to start writing
mm-hmm.
to know if I like it or not. Because I can't tell from the outline. I can't tell. So that was my week.
I have one question around this. And I'm so curious how other writers feel about this. Do you ever get to a point in a project where you're just like, you know what? I'm going to give the money back. You know what?
No.
I can't.
I said,
I'm just going to call them up and I'm going to say, I'm going to send all the money back.
I have said that
I can't
on this particular project and another one. I literally said, okay, well, we should just give the money back because everything we pitched is not happening. And so we should just give the money back, which does, people would
you
be
can't
like,
do.
What?
You're
no,
like
you
contractually obligated to deliver things and then you get paid for it. But it's like, no, I'll send them a check. I'm going to call my manager right now. I'm going to call my agent. We're done. I can't. Right.
And you can also look at the anxiety that I'm having around, is it good enough? And if it doesn't stop you and allow yourself to start writing and you just allow it to be good enough and placeholdery, then the anxiety is working for you because it's going to later take you back to look right there. Can we raise that? Can we make that better? Is that the best story? Is that the best thing? But instead of that being something that shuts me down, makes me feel like I'm afraid of failure, if I just start going, right? Then it can be helpful. There is a way that it can be helpful for raising up the writing. It's just when it's clobbering you on the head, which it's been doing, it's not so fun. But so there's my week. Now let's talk to Jennifer. Jen, you started your early Hollywood career as an assistant and development exec. And I'm going to guess it was full of highs and lows, having been a development executive, but it eventually led you to forming your own community support group. So can you talk to us a little bit about, especially for our listeners who may be emerging and don't even know what a development executive is, and what you did and how it led you to that, creating that group?
Also, why it used to be called a D-girl.
I know. That's
I don't think they're called
now.
That anymore.
No. It shows my... the era that I came up. Well, there's different communities that you're forming all the time, right? And so I'd say the first community that I formed was when I went to school and I went to Northwestern and came out here and I thought I was going to be a stranger in a strange town, but it turned out there were a lot of other Northwestern people out here. So there's that community of friends. And I started working as an intern and doing all the menial tasks. So yay, interns. And those jobs, the intern job, the assistant jobs, sometimes they're, you know, the tasks seem menial or less important than the other things, but every single thing that you're doing is part of building your community, because you're building your relationships and your reputation. You're building the fact that you're proving yourself as reliable. You're proving yourself as resourceful. You're proving yourself as trustworthy. And
as an exec at Egg Pictures, I knew which interns were doing the dishes without being asked.
And I have to say, those are the hardest jobs and the jobs without which others can't actually function, because you're expected to be invisible, present, forward thinking, anticipating. And it's all these little things that people don't realize have to be done. But without them, everything falls apart. So yay, PAs and interns and assistants. Just
did you ever get tested as an intern? Did you ever get tested?
I had a test maybe in getting the job. Like at the time, producer Susan Landau was like, after I got introduced to her and met with her, she's like, all right, call the office every day and see if we need you. And it was like, I literally called the office and like, okay, thanks for calling. Bye. Call the office. Okay, thanks for calling. Bye. I did it. And then like after a week of calls, they're like, okay, come in. I don't know if it was a test or they weren't sure when the things were starting or
it's
what.
Both. It's both. It is both. I know a producer who tells every PA, have gum. Have gum on your person. And she walks around and randomly says, I want a piece of gum. And she said, the kid who never had the gum. And then there was another kid who opened his jacket and he had six different kinds of gum. It's like, what would you like?
And a watch.
She was like, he was like, oh, I know that's the kid. That's the guy, right? All right. So how did you go from interns and that community to development?
Well, so I was a development assistant at Fox TV Movies for two execs there. And that was at a time when like Bob Greenblatt was there and Craig Erwich and Mike Darnell, all these, and they were, you know, not what they've become now. I learned development in the TV movie realm and learned how to keep, you know, six plates in the air and learned my love of it. And you know, the reason for all this relationship building is the jobs that you're going to get are the jobs that someone who knows you is going to refer you to. And someone sent me over to interview with Bill Pullman's company at Castle Rock Entertainment back at a very fun time when Castle Rock had all of these talent deals and, you know, you're running into Hugh Grant and so-and-so, you know, in the hallways. Or one time I got barreled over in the elevator by someone and he didn't notice and apologize, but the man who was with him did apologize. And the guy who bowled over me was Rob Reiner, and the guy who apologized on his behalf was Bruce Willis. But, you know, that was just like a fun, silly Hollywood.
Fun casual.
Hollywood.
Oh, my casual. God, so casual.
I love it.
So I started out as assistant to the VP and I worked my way up to being director of development there. And while I was there, I joined this group, speaking of community, I joined this group of women that had formed a little bit before me that were all working for talent in, you know, that unique job that requires, so, well, Meg, you know what that's like. And it requires so much. And part of what it requires is major confidentiality. And so by coming together in this group where we all sort of shared the same stresses and challenges and joys and concerns and needs for confidentiality, we started meeting once a month. And we've been meeting once a month for 25 years.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
So it's not a group where you guys get together and share secrets. It's more about getting support about the burden and the sort of challenges around that specific experience, right?
Yeah. And as, I mean, everybody was developed, everyone was D-girls back then. And as people's you know, career trajectories went different places. Now we're readers, writers. I'm the reader, but we have a manager, we have TV executives, we have film producers, you know, just
can you
it's a
talk
great
about
group of people.
What being a development executive is for talent? Let's say, for example, I wanted to have work with a development person, right? I don't know if writers get to do this anymore or if even everyone does, but like, what would that mean? Like, I'm going to be like, okay, Jennifer, I'm going to hire you to be my development person. What does that relationship look like? What are you doing?
Well, I think I can speak from just like that experience of, I was lucky enough to work at this company with a lovely person named Bill Pullman. And we on his team were partly looking for projects that he could star in, but not only that. We had, you know, the heydays of, we had discretionary development money, so we could, we actually were developing a story on the silent movie theater. And there were these two really, really good writers that had never sold anything before, I don't think. One was still working as a temp, and we hired them to write this script that never got made. And their names are Marcus and McFeely. They're now like ginormous Marvel, amazing superheroes themselves. Also lovely guys. But if you develop something that you take from the outside or develop something from the inside, you will meet with writers and give feedback, give notes, and just sort of shepherd the story toward a place where it is ready to be, start putting the production pieces together of director and cast and money.
You read a lot of scripts. And you met a lot of writers and you gave a lot of notes and you had to figure out how to interact with the different personalities and try to get the best from everybody. So I'm so curious if you have like a top do's and don'ts of when you're getting notes from, say, a development executive.
Well, I think that it's one thing that this podcast does really well is talking about helping writers to sort of know how to weather feedback and take it in. When you're getting notes, you know, it's just always so important to keep your ears open and your mouth shut. And I personally am a note taker. I think that sometimes that can help you keep your mouth shut if you're like, and it can look like you're respecting what, you know, the person is saying, you're like, oh, that, let me get that down. You know, it can buy you time if you feel like you need a response. A lot of times it's better not to respond to a note in the moment, especially if you're first hearing it, because I know as a writer, I've heard notes that made me hate people. And then like, just given a little time, I'm like, oh, that's brilliant. I'm going to like change the title of my script based on that note, you know, like the whole thing is blown open for me in a good way. So, you know, you don't be defensive. You don't try to explain things. You try to understand. And that phrase, you know, being curious about what is the note behind the note really does help, because the person who is giving you the feedback is, usually, you know, on your side and trying to get the best thing for you and for the team. And so it's really about being quiet and thinking.
I love that they're on your side, right? They have a stake in this project creatively, professionally. And so I love that, right? Working on this together.
Also,
we both love it.
You can also, by asking questions, and this was is never my intention. My intention is I really want to dive into this note because I don't quite understand it. So do you mean this? Do you mean that? What? And then you'll start to realize, oh, this development person, this isn't their note. This is their boss's note, right? And they're not exactly sure either, but it's a very, you know, so then you can be like, okay, it's the boss's note, which, by the way, is a good thing to know. That is the head of the company's note. So maybe there's a trail there. Again, talking about what I talked about for my week, that there's different movies in different heads, right? And that this note is coming down feels like a different movie. Well, that's really good to know, right? Just to investigate and be curious about. Politically, you might not be able to get near that person to ask them the more questions, but that development person can help you figure out, how do I approach that note, you know, given it does these things or whatever's happening. But now you move from that to being a, Jen, you move from that to being a reader, right? A union studio reader.
Well, I didn't start out as a union studio reader. When I came to LA, I originally wanted to be a writer, and I loved like all of the learning that I did on the jobs. And I think that that was valuable. When the deals ended at Castle Rock, I worked really, really hard to get another development deal and or development job. And I actually got the job offer. And when they said, can you, you know, give us a year commitment? Of course they would ask that. But I like balked. But I was like, oh no, I'm going to be shepherding other people's projects and not doing what I came here to do. So at that time, it felt right to step away. And so I just did freelance reading. One of the people that I knew from my development time was like, hey, I need a reader. She worked for Sandra Bullock's company. And so I started cobbling together a bunch of freelance jobs, because you can't make a living doing freelance jobs. And I think today they probably still sadly pay close to what they paid for freelance jobs back then. So I read for a whole bunch of companies. And I got a job as a receptionist, like a backup receptionist, where they were like, oh, you can do your reading at the desk. So it was like putting the, you know, the paychecks together. But that choice turned out to be good because, two things happened. But one of the women from the group that I was still meeting with, the sort of support development group, she worked for Focus Features. And I was reading for all of these companies, and I was like, you know, I'd really love to read for. I love Focus Features. And her name was Kaylee Small. And I just want to shout out to her because she's no longer with us.
Oh, I knew Kaylee Small.
Yeah. Just, she was a wonderful executive, and she supportively, just no bones about it, walked my resume in there, and it changed my life. Because I was able to start working, reading for this company that I loved the kinds of films they make. And then I'd only ever heard of the Readers Union, like it was somewhere out there, like it was a myth to me. Like I didn't even believe it existed. And then because Focus was part of Universal, it was a guild signatory company. So they organized, and I was able to join the Readers Union that way, which is, the Readers Union is actually part of the Motion Picture Editors Guild. So I was no longer, you know, below the poverty level. I had a living wage, I had a self-esteem, and I had good benefits. And so I've been reading for Focus Features for all that time, and I'm grateful to Kaylee Small for that.
What's the job as a reader? Are you just, what kind of coverage are you writing? Who are you talking to? How are you, like, a union for readers? I never even heard of that until right this minute in this interview. So I'm so curious what the job is.
What is that like? So it's a little bit different depending on what studio you work for. Because Focus is a smaller art house film, I have maybe, there's me. But like Warner Brothers right now has 7 readers, like a stable, like the big companies, like Warner Brothers, the bigger places have stables of readers that, you know, are managed often by story editors who the story editor takes in all of the submissions to all of the, executives and sort of assigns to the different readers according to what they know is that reader's skill or taste or da 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 da, or who's been on what project like all along. And they can say, you know, here's this, have it back by the afternoon. Here's this, have it back by the evening. It can be like that. You are often at Focus. I feel so lucky that I read so many great scripts, and a lot of times they've already been developed for a while. A lot of times the scripts I read already have directors and actors attached. And I'm such a fan of the art of movie making that, I mean, I've been doing this for 100 years, and I still get excited when I like crack the spine of that PDF and think like, okay, what's this going to be like? What's this story going to be? And I think that's important for people to know about readers as an animal, like especially like the people who do it professionally. We're like this special kind of movie nerd. We love things. And again, it's about being on the side of the writer. We're hoping that the writer is going to take us on a great journey. And a lot of times it's like trying to see, like, are they hitting the target they set for themselves? Like, are they hitting the target they set for themselves? Where are they falling short? Where is it right for our company mandate? Or not right for us, but right for someone else? Or where is it right for us, but we've already done something like that, or someone else has already done something like that? Or where is it right for the market or not right for the market? Or how is it part of the cultural conversation that everybody's having right now? Those are all the kind of questions that we ask when we're reading stuff. And it, you know, goes without saying that everything has to be there, the plot, the character, the dialogue, the theme and stuff. One of the things that I do a lot is draft comparisons. And if it's an internal project, I mean, I've got my PDF side by side and I'm going line by line by line by line to not miss a thing, and to then analyze what is the ultimate impact of this group of revisions and what, and I'm also not in the room with anybody ever. I am completely in a vacuum. So I don't know what notes have been given to the writer. I might guess if I had expressed them myself, but I don't know what's actually been given
why
to the
would
writer.
Why would they ever be doing that? Why do they need to do a draft comparison?
Well, first of all, like if it's just an outside project submission, if it's being resubmitted, and maybe it was passed on before, the comparison is going to help the executive sort of have a shorthand of like, well, why is it different than why we passed on it before? Wow, they solved that problem, you know, or kind of thing. And as we all know, coverage is a tool that everybody uses to have to get through the day.
Why would they be doing a draft comparison of one of their own projects?
Because there's so many people who are needing to track what's changing. And a lot of times as the writer me is learning from this task of like how the drafts are changing based on like, how does the change impact production? How does it impact budget? How does it impact location? How does it impact casting? And it's just a way of like, tracking those changes and documenting them and just making them known. Because I don't know if when you read a script again after having read it a while before, you might forget like the actual detail of things that have changed. I don't have to do it so much at Focus, but a lot of studio readers have to do credit determination from the studio side and have to do like legal comparison. Because like, say, for instance, The Color Purple, there's a book, there's a movie, there's a musical, and then there's the new movie musical.
If you could summarize or just think about what, as a writer, have you learned about writing from reading and evaluating all these scripts?
Well, I feel lucky that I'm reading really good scripts. I think you can only learn so much from reading a lot of bad scripts. But I find it inspiring to read these really well-written scripts I find it encouraging because I'll see scripts by great writers that were submitted years ago and are still trying, you know, like that it takes everyone a long time. I think I also learn about a lot about the rewrite process by doing those comparisons because, you know, so often we're talking about get it tighter. You want your page count not just to be a reflection of like how long the movie's going to be, but it impacts your budget and your pacing. And, you know, for storytellers, pacing is most important to us. But both. And so like I was doing a draft comparison just last night. And I see that several times what was cut was a transitional travel scene of like the character's got to get from here to there. And we, you know, we see him hurrying down the muddy alley. But we don't need to have that whole setup.
No, nope, we just location. Need to show him up muddy yeah. at the new place.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So the scene yeah. heading goes away. That location setup goes away. All that money goes away. That day of shooting goes away. And the, you know, the prop department just in costume just needs yes. to know he's muddy as yeah. he enters the top of that scene.
Jen, you also early in your career, I think you mentioned this to Jeff, you had a lit agent that just wasn't a good fit.
Oh, dear.
And that you were you know, they were trying to turn you into a writer you weren't, which I'm really fascinated mm-hmm. by that. What happened?
Well, I was young. And I think when I got the agent, I was feeling like I should be grateful, you know? And so I was just grateful. And, you know, I think perhaps I'd been trained too much in the assistant mindset of like, anticipate the needs, get the job, you know, do what's needed. But I was not really understanding myself well enough to articulate myself. Like when he just didn't get me, and what he was focusing on was maybe what was trendy at the time. So he was like having me pitch on raunchy comedies, which I tried, but anyone who knows me would be like, huh? I mean, whatever. I can be raunchy. But
do you feel like yeah. this is the setup, like even in the word, like manager or agent, like that there's this idea that they're sort of the boss of us, that we need to give our power away to them because they're going to guide us through an industry that is baffling and confusing to us. Like, and I don't think they necessarily come to the table like that. But unless we come to the table, like what you're saying, like, here's who I am and this is what I want, it can be really tricky.
Yeah. And we didn't speak the same language at all. Like I didn't know what snarky meant. And
so who is this person and how can they reach me?
Let me tell you their name.
No, okay.
And I'm a slow talker from Georgia. So, you know, it's just, I think that was really the main thing. Like I think that I can like confidently state, okay, this is who I am today. And these are the kinds of projects that I have to offer and can tell. These are the kinds of stories I want to tell. And I don't need to chase some other trend or try to contort myself to be something else. My stories are mine to tell.
So then how did you get to the point in 2015 where you wrote Jack of Red Hearts?
Where I got a movie made.
Yeah.
Well, I prayed. I was working the job as the receptionist and the freelance reader, and I'm a big believer in applying for contests. I got selected for this contest that only existed for 2 years. It's called Writer's Arc, and Amy Kane and Amy Vittori created this thing for writers that we like had to show up in office hours and, you know, write this project. And I wrote this script as part of that. And I got it done, and my agent was sort of confused by it. One of my scripts before that had made me a Outfest screenwriting fellow. So I was doing sort of volunteer work every year on the jury for the Outfest Screenwriting Lab. And I met another woman who was on the jury. We became friends, and her name was Lucy Mukherjee. And she's like, oh, you're a writer. I'd love to read something you've written. And this was after I prayed to God for a champion for that project. And she showed up and she just loved it. And she was a producer who was working at a company that made horror movies. And so my script was refreshing to her and more in line of something that she wanted to make personally. So she just started sharing with people. And in so doing, it found a director that named Janet Grillo, who really responded personally to the content of my story, because my story was inspired by my brother's family, who has a daughter who's severely impacted by autism. And Janet had an, you know, experience as a mom of someone on the spectrum. So the three of us paired up, and this is something you don't hear people talk about a lot. You often hear about a writer optioning their script to someone, even for no money or whatever, to try to get it set up. And I don't remember where this idea came from, but we decided to form an exclusive shopping agreement. I don't know if y'all talk about that much. I don't think I've heard that. And so we had an exclusive shopping agreement, the three of us, and we did the Film Independent Producers Lab, and there was a produced by conference, the PGA, that we kind of competed with. And Lucy just kept sharing it, and they were submitting it different places, and we found allies in Sundial Pictures. And I think the takeaway from this is it was this project that presented to each person, each member of the team, something that their career was lacking or something they were still wanting for their career. And so it was just a wonderful experience. And I was so lucky. At the time we got cast, and we were going to shoot in New York, and my boss at Focus Features was Jeb Brody. And I am so incredibly grateful that he offered me the opportunity to go take time off, be on set for all of principal photography, and know that my job would be waiting for me when I came back. And it was just like a dream come true to have that experience. Because the movie was partly inspired by my brother's family, it was cool that like my little nephew got to be a featured extra, like your family got to visit the set, you know. And it was so great to be there, because I dreamed for so long about getting a movie made, and it's so cool when the characters that you've lived with alone for so long, other people know,
yeah, like,
and are embodying it and are enabling, and it was just such a great experience. And having to do rewrites, you know, because it was a small, low budget film, we often had to pivot based on different things. And it was cool to be able to be there and help with like, okay, let's write a new scene for this change or whatever, stuff like that.
Wow. So so much of your stories that you're telling us are sound like, because you're approaching things with curiosity and generosity and kindness, and then you're attracting these same kind of people to your life and in your sphere. I'm sure you've attracted a lot of, you know, people would try to introduce themselves to your life that you're like, hard pass, no thanks. But it sounds like your success is really about those core values that we on the show are always talking about. So now we're going to talk about how you connected to TSL, and as a sort of listener spotlight episode, how has it impacted you or frustrated you, or like, why are you a part of this community with us?
I am a woman in this business, and I think part of my problem in my agent experience was the intimidation factor, the insecurity of myself. And it just meant the world to me to hear the screenwriting life voiced by your voices. And especially as I am a mom, and the challenges of making it all happen and fitting everything in, I find it so inspiring when you have so many different choices for podcast or news or content to like be stuck in traffic or washing dishes or whatever, to choose the screenwriting life to be in my ears as opposed to something else. Just listening to these other, whether it's your guests or y'all talking about how you struggle, like, oh yeah, that's how I struggle. That's just part of it. It's like so affirming. And there's just so many like tangible tips for dealing with the struggle and the joy. If you're like me and you've got to have a job to pay the bills and maybe you have a family to take care of, don't think less of yourself as a writer. I mean, as a quick Google search to see all the crazy different jobs that some of your favorite writers or great writers have had, don't disdain your life. Your day job, your family, that's you living life. That's you getting material. That's you having the human experience. And then, you know, taking it up a notch, when you know, things happen, tragedies happen, and they can really like seem like a distraction from your writing. We all get distracted when difficult things happen, but just consider it a time when your lava is closer to the surface. If you're having to wait in a doctor's office or for some kind of report, or if you're grieving a relationship, just spit those feelings into the app or scribble in your journal. Don't worry what they're for or where they'll go. And then once you've survived the hard thing, you won't have to muster the same amount of heavy lifting to dredge up that lava that you went through. You will have already captured it.
What would be something that you would have loved to have heard when you were, you know, in the struggle at some point, or that you sort of have to remind yourself of now, or something that you've learned that you think would be valuable to our listeners?
Just having an agent is not the end all be all. It needs to be a match. And it doesn't mean there's anything wrong with that person. And it doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you. You just need to be with someone who gets you and that y'all can talk to each other. Right.
I love that. That's so important. I think so many people just get their nose on the trail of an agent and they're missing so, so many things and layers and opportunities.
I think also like when you're building community, whether it's with alums or just people you met at Austin and you form a writing group, or people you met on the Facebook page and you form a writing group, or you take part in a festival or whatever, community requires consistency. And it doesn't mean like constant. It doesn't mean constancy, just consistency. And that means don't just show up when you need something, right? Like sometimes we say, oh, I'm going to skip that because I'm not in need, but you need to show up in plenty and in want, because though you might not be in need, the other members of your community are, and that's your time to hear them, if only to hear them, maybe offer advice or reference or referral or something. We have to be aware that we can get trapped in our comfort zones. We spend so much time working alone, working in our head, on the computer. It's easy to become reclusive. So what I am working on is, how do I extend my comfort zone? How do I make myself more comfortable being uncomfortable? so it doesn't throw me off my game? Or how can I truly get comfortable in more settings with more people, not just be happy doing the writing?
Yeah, I think that's so amazing. It's the difference I like to think about in terms of the difference between like networking and connecting, right? That I'm not looking always for like, I need something or I want to, it's give and take. It's a relationship.
All right. So I feel like you just answered the third question of the last questions we asked. So I want to ask you the other two. Okay. What is something that gives you joy either about writing or doing the reading that you do?
You asked me two questions. That makes me want to answer two questions.
You mean two topics, writing or the reader? So answer both.
As a reader, the thing that makes me happiest is that I actually did this job before I knew it was a job. When I was in high school, I kept a journal. Like, I was a busy kid in high school. I was doing all the things. But I kept, in my free time, I was reading extra stuff. And I was keeping a journal of what I was reading. And I would, like, summarize the story. And then I'd say what I loved. Didn't even know coverage existed. My favorite thing about writing is I really do believe that even if something doesn't get made, I love that those characters do exist and that they're real to me. And I don't know if that's like a Velveteen Rabbit kind of thing. They're real because I love them, but spending the time with them, for whatever reason, I'm writing that story, whether it's like processing some grief or trauma or trying to figure out some question, something that I'm curious about, they're real. And then it's just icing on the cake when you get to make it and other people recognize that they're real.
Love it. All right, Lauren, ask the next one.
What pisses you off about being a writer, being a development person, a reader, whatever? Okay, what pisses you off about the industry and your experience in it? That's the question.
Oh, shoot. Oh, I know. What pisses me off is my reading brain and my writing brain are completely separate parts. Like, when I read a script for someone else, I almost feel like Bobby Fischer. This is highlighted for me and that shows up and I'm like, oh yeah, I feel very, just have that, the blessing of objectivity. And I can see like, all right, here's what's going to help. But when I look at my own, it's like, does this work?
You're Maybe. Blind. I know. It's so maddening. It's madness.
I sometimes have to pretend someone else wrote what I wrote in order to do that. And it's still really hard. And the friend that told me yesterday that I'm just telling myself no, he also gave me a really good note. I have three notes that I got on something I was real, real mad about. Real, real mad about. And he was like, you have to take your, like, that response out of that and, like, look at it as if someone else wrote that and is giving, and that person got the note. How would you, as, like, a mentor, help them find what the note under the note really is? And he got me in this place where I could actually get there. And then he workshopped me with it. Now I came up with something that, of course, is way better, way fits the tone.
He put you in your frontal lobe. He took you out of your amygdala brain and put you in your frontal lobe.
Which
it's very,
is,
very
think,
hard to do.
But what you're talking about, right, is that, right? When I read my own work, I sort of panic. Is that right? I don't know. Like, whereas I'm reading someone else's work, I'm coming at it with kindness and I'm on your side, and sort of switching into that space for me is really hard. Like, what do I love about this? Then why do I love it? Is that enough? Right. It's for me, that's what that struggle is. So I hate
the two brains when I'm actually writing, because I like can read and understand and talk at like the NBA level. But like when you're writing, you always have to go back to the beginning. I mean, you don't, because you have skill sets and you can go faster. But the dreamer is still just spewing out stuff, right? Like, it's literally like, why can't the dreamer talk to the frontal lobe and just jump to what it's going to need to be? We used to joke at Pixar, God, if we had a time machine, we could just go watch this movie and then come back. Because we're going to go through so many versions to get there. And it's going to, hopefully, if it's a great movie, feel inevitable that, of course, this is the movie, right? But oh my goodness, to get there, the dreamer just goes around and around. I totally agree with you. I agree 100%. That separation is beautiful. It's why we are complex beings. And yet, oh my gosh, it can be so annoying.
Yeah.
Yep. So annoying. Time machines would be amazing.
Wouldn't it be amazing?
Yeah.
But also scary, maybe. Because you're going to be like, oh, the script didn't go. Nobody ever made it.
I mean, but then you have to remember that the work you did on that script is actually going to help you on the next.
That's what I'm saying. It would be bad because if I went forward and saw they're never going to make this, it's too expensive, or some other movie that was like it got made in tanks, so now they're never going to make it. You would not write it and not learn what you needed to write. This is why we don't have time machines, people. This is why.
Well, thank you.
All right, Jen, Thank you so much. It was wonderful to have you here.
This was wonderful. I'm so grateful. And I'm just absolutely thrilled.
And thank you guys so much for joining us today on the show.
And check us out on Facebook, where you can connect with other writers and ask lots of amazing questions, to answer some questions maybe too. And remember, you are not alone, and keep writing.